This talk is the current state of the Bigfoot package, and that's more or less the beauty part of the Beauty and the Beast talk from yesterday, where I'm going to present what one can currently do with the Bigfoot package, or what I can do currently with the Bigfoot package. I'll come to that later, but the current state is going to be available in a few days. So the state of the Bigfoot package, one question is what is it good for? And let's see. There are some features I say which you get for free, namely just by loading the package and doing nothing else. Those are what I call the free features, which more or less make it a non-brainer to just, if you have footnotes in your document, place a use package of Bigfoot into your document without thinking about it. So that's the footnote break decisions are based on a global optimization. That means it makes use of text broken penalty, whittle penalty, club penalty, line penalty, all those page break decision-oriented penalties, which tech considers only after the fact when breaking footnotes, they are considered. For example, I think the tugboat classes define widow penalty as 10,000, meaning that a paragraph may not end in an isolated line that gets to the next page. So if a page starts with an isolated line of a paragraph, a widow penalty of 10,000 prohibits that and moves takes care that at least two lines appear on the next page. The problem is, if you have on the second to last line in the paragraph a footnote, then tech will be unable to take that into account. And instead of breaking the footnote, which in principle it's capable of, it will move the whole paragraph, the whole two lines of the paragraph and the whole footnote to the next page. And if the footnote is long, it will leave a very, very large gap on the page. And with a Bigfoot package, that does not happen. It just cuts the footnote at a different place and in that way manages to fill the page properly. That's an extreme case, but if the penalties are set to less extreme values, then the optimization of Bigfoot still sets in and leads to better and more pleasing results. So what you also get for free is color works across page breaks in footnotes. If you ever used text color in a footnote and the footnote got broken across pages, very, very strange things happens because the typesetting engine has no idea that now the context of the footnote is only carrying the color and should and that context should be restored not at the top of the next page but rather at the bottom. I think I have an example here. Oh, just need to get what was it called? That I needed to run this, I think, under Tech Live 2005 because some version of that was pretty broken. Ah, yeah, okay, so I can demonstrate, I think, more than one effect here. Bigfoot is out commented. Okay, if we now view this text, we see the effect, this procedure and effect. We have here a paragraph and a footnote and a very large gap. And that happens because we had a widow penalty of 10,000 and the footnote started here. So instead of just breaking the footnote here at a different place, tech decided to move the whole stuff to the next page and make a very large gap between the paragraphs here. And let's see what it does with the colored footnote. I have a footnote here typeset in two colors, and red in the first part and green in the next part. And yeah, we see it starts in red here on the next page. No, the main text starts in red. The main text starts in red now, and the footnote itself is black. So that's pretty much confused. That's in DVI mode. And the nice thing is if we switch to PDF mode and rerun this thing and see what happens now, we get the same page breaks, and we get a different color. So no color at all gets through to the next page. So in either PDF tech mode and in as well as in DVI mode, we get strange color effects and horrible page breaks. And if I now put the Bigfoot package in and run it through LaTeX, you should run LaTeX to get the references right. Okay, so let's do that. We already see we got two pages formatted here, and now the footnote here starts in red. Since the page break decision is different, we see that it finished the paragraph here, chose a breakpoint early on the footnote to accommodate finishing that paragraph, and then moved the rest onto there where the colors are properly. The main text is in black as it was before, and the footnote texts are in the colors that were intended. And if I now go and change the widow penalty, which is here 2000, to something pretty bad, but not infinite, and run this through LaTeX, we see that it doesn't change the outcome. Even though the penalty is not infinite, it picks this page break. Whereas if I now outcomment Bigfoot, and the aux, we managed to get this in two pages as well, but it's done differently, namely by doing a widow. So the whole idea of aesthetic optimization breaks down in text normal algorithm as soon as you get into the area of footnotes. Either you specify infinite and then catastrophes happen, or you specify anything finite and then a worse choice of breakpoints is taken. And it works the same in PDF tech mode as in DVI mode. I won't show it now. You get working color across footnotes. You get footnote break decisions based on a global optimization, verb and similar commands that change cat codes and that usually start breaking in footnotes. I think some early Greek typesetting support had similar problems with some accents. They start working because the input is parsed just one time instead of several times as LaTeX does it and start it. There are no jumbled footnotes in connection with here points. I have no demonstration working right now for that. That if you have combined footnotes and figures on a single page, then sometimes the footnotes get torn into very strange things and get reassembled in pieces which are out of order. It's really rather startling, and the example I had here currently doesn't work, so I can't show it. Another thing is that marks are undisturbed by additional output routine passes. When you have typesetting passes which repeat typesetting the stuff, then your top mark, the header line, sometimes is off and refers to material that tech has already seen but considered not to place on the page. And this does not happen if you in case of the Bigfoot package, which is a good thing since it often considers material that it then puts not on the actual page. Okay, this is a minor detail. If you have a document that contains something like more than 5,000 labels or so, and you try to run it through LaTeX, that's just a bug in LaTeX, then you get a safe stack overflow and the run does not finish. I've patched that up here and I'll have to get a fix into LaTeX as well soon, but there's a problem with getting this fix both into LaTeX as well as into Babel, since that's a different story. Okay, then there are features which are available without additional effort if you're already using Manyfoot style. So if you're using Manyfoot style, which is a package intended to make multiple footnote blocks available, then you already have invested some effort into putting your telling Manyfoot style how your various footnote blocks may look. And what's available here is, of course, multiply broken footnote blocks, since Manyfoot tries to use the normal LaTeX output routine, which already is pretty bad with single footnote blocks and becomes pretty horrible with multiple footnote blocks, then it makes a large difference in when what material can get arranged properly on the page. And you get nested footnote hierarchies where any higher level block can place a footnote for a lower level block. So that means you can have footnotes within footnotes, and that also works well, and it still maintains the relation that a footnote anchor and the start of the footnote are on the same page. And what's also nice is that you can use paragraph style footnotes where all footnotes are, which is important for very small footnotes, are just put into a running paragraph, and the layout of these in paragraph footnotes, instead of being a fixed layout like the Manyfoot style, does that it's an adaptation of what your document class has specified for a footnote layout. So the footnote layout gets more or less taken from your document class without extra effort. You don't need any extra programming for your in paragraph footnotes to be in style pretty much like the normal footnotes. So then we have some features that have been externalized into additional package. There's the per page style package. This style can sort counters into page order if there are certain situations where otherwise the order would be different. And it can reset them at the beginning of page. There are some cases where you want footnotes numbered, footnote numbering starting new on each page again. In particular, if you're numbering them with not with numbers, but with letters or symbols or so, then you would be running very soon out of letters or symbols if you didn't restart the numbering on each page. And the per page style option does that. And And then there is the suffix style, which allows input magic, convenient input language magic. Namely, you can define control sequences. Let's see whether we have an example of that. Do I have this? Okay. Here are a few combinations. I mean, the section has been redefined to work with an optional caret and stuff like that. Input syntax, so change commands like that usually are pretty involved to define in LaTeX, and it's the suffix style makes it very easy to define these sort of things very fast and very convenient, these shortcuts. And I think other chapters have more examples. So actually I should show it in action in the current document that I'm typesetting with it. Let's see whether we have it here. I think one can see the page more or less. So we have a main text running here. It's always interesting to take a look at what the bad page break decisions derive from. And actually, where's the log file? No nonsense. If I take a look here, underfill VBox, the underfill VBoxes are the interesting things. I think there are about, at the current point of time, one or two dozen underfill VBoxes in there, and some of them are caused by, I'd say, writer stupidity. Some of them. Let's see what this one is. That would be 782. Why doesn't it have? Why doesn't it provide me with that command? Whatever. Interesting. What did I say? 782? Just a minute ago, I defined, oh, show it is. So we see there is a lot of white space on this page. And if we take a look at where this is from, and we see that on the next page, we had a paragraph and in two lines, and we have the case where the widow, we have a high widow penalty, and the paragraph in the next line, so I can't split here, and it starts a footnote, and I need to take at least one line of footnote. So I need this amount of space in order to get any more material on the previous page, and this amount is not available. Okay, so this is just bad luck, I say. Let's see whether we have any. Underfull VBox. Those with finite badnesses are not so much interesting, because they are usually, so here is a bad one, quite later, show it was. And if we take a look at that one, it's a similar case. We have a line which introduces a footnote. So if we bring that line to the previous page, we have to bring that footnote, which would then appear in a block of its own. And that does not fit in there, though it should fit if we split that footnote. So that's, should it? Not sure about that. Yeah, maybe. That actually, I have to take a look at that one and see why that came about. That's sort of suspicious, but yeah. Okay. Anyway, one thing that's noticeable is that you have to go through a lot of pages in order to find bad pages. Here is another one which looks sort of ugly, because here a footnote just has a single line, which is a club. And if we take a look at why it just has a single line, it's obvious. If the footnote starts here, there's not much more material I can take here. And if I started here, I have to bring in this footnote as well. So what's there to do? I'm lucky that I don't get an overfull page, actually. It would move then the whole stuff to the next page. But one thing is, since this does a global optimization, the more complex the pages get, the easier it usually becomes to avoid page break decisions. Most of the underfull VBoxes are here on pages where you have just text running on without any footnote, and you get a widow penalty. And there's no material to avoid that widow penalty, to avoid that widow, namely that page break splitting off a single line of a paragraph. So if you have a page like that, and it would end with one more line, there's nothing that the Bigfoot package can do about that. But it can do a lot when those pages contain more material. Here we have another case where there's a bit of more white space than you would think is nice. There are several pages of that sort. So here it starts. We have more white space than is nice. And that means, why don't we have more main text? And if we take a look at why we have it, it's the same case. We would need both lines as well as the footnote start if we were to put any more material on the previous page. And it's often like that. Actually, the most horrible decisions, I don't think I have an example like here, is when the author decides to place three or four footnotes right one after the other in order to say in text A, this is the case, in one footnote, and then another footnote, and in text B, this is the case. And footnotes that are appearing at the same level. So, if you start the first footnote, you have to finish it in order to be able to start the second footnote. And so you have a large block of material that must appear on one page. And if you do things like that, then the best algorithm can't change the outcome. But what you would then do is try to write just a single footnote and put it in there. And usually that's possible. Okay, that's, I think. So we see that this book, which is going to be here, this is one case where we have two footnotes just right behind one another. And that means that if this footnote is started, it must be ended, so that the next footnote can start as well. And if you take a look at what effect is on the previous page, we have lots of free space there because of that. And that's sort of a nuisance. There are two solutions that the author can do. One thing is that he can just damn it, use a single footnote, and say here in page on page here, this and that, and on page here, that and that. And in that case, of course, the footnote can be split somewhere here, and no problem results. The other possibility is that he puts a line break here. So says, okay, we don't put this in a single line, but we make two lines. But if you see the effect you get then you have a footnote that starts going here, and it ends like that on the second page. That's rather ugly as well. So the solution would be to make a single. There are stuff like that that the proofreaders then have to make a decision about how to solve it, because the computer can't. There's really no way that you can fix that kind of brain damage automatically. Yeah, here are other cases where stuff gets carried to the next page. And again, those two footnotes have to appear on one page because this paragraph can't be split in the middle. In some cases like that, you can say, okay, then I put manually here, I conditional page break, say something like no page break, opening brace of three, no page break, that means I'm almost sure I don't want a page break here. And in contrast to a widow, which means I'm absolutely sure I don't want a page break here, this allows then in emergency situations to do a page break. Okay, so that's the application which is currently being done using that style and to which it was developed for. Let's try to get back to the talk.
How common or how impossible is it to ask authors to change the contents a little bit to avoid these things and not just fiddle around with techniques and touch editing?
It depends. I mean, if you have You can't ask authors, if you're doing a critical edition, obviously you can't ask them to change the contents or the text or whatever of what the original author writes, has written at one point of time. Whether to use a single or two footnotes or stuff like that, when you have publisher footnotes, then it's more or less the publisher's choice how he writes his footnotes. And in that case, you can argue with them. I mean, if you just say, if you have three footnotes of the same priority that start in the same line, probably just run behind another, then just ask them, how are you supposed, how is the program supposed to do that? And it's obvious, it's not possible. I mean, if you give this to a human and say, please make a human typesetting effort and distribute the lines appropriately, he will look at it and say, I can't do anything either. So in that case, it's possible to reason with the authors as long as the authors are not dead yet or the works have been printed in that manner already. So. Now we're coming to the core of the Bigfoot package, not the external packages. And the features that are described in the user level documentation, which is what gets formatted before the code part. There is an example document, namely the documentation of the Bigfoot package itself, and how it is formatted there is written in there. Where is the Bigfoot DTX? I think I have it somewhere. So here is the user level documentation, and as you see, it's with lots of examples. And we see here in paragraph block that is formatted with in paragraph footnotes and yet has the possibility to put display math in between. And it does that, you can specify for this particular footnote, okay, I know that usually I want in this block paragraph style footnotes, but this single footnote, please format it in vertical mode. Because if you don't tell it to format it in vertical mode, it will, the display math mode will explode around you. And if you say it, format it in vertical mode, then it can deal with that. Similar for this footnote where it has a bulleted list. Again, you would have to format this in vertical mode right from the start because it wouldn't work otherwise. And the in paragraph footnotes of the Manyfoots style package can't switch between styles for single footnotes. Yeah, and then here's the example for how this layout has been generated. It declares, of course, it does use package from Bigfoot. Then it declares a default footnote level. It declares a second footnote level. It specifies a different numbering. It says that the footnotes in the footnote block B should be numbered per page and resorted into order in case they get out of order if they are called in from both the main text and the footnote text. Yeah, and then we have some examples with footnotes here which use verb constructs in them and stuff like that. So the documentation itself is a non-trivial example, and it explains how it does this and what kind of commands it uses for that. So that is pretty much helpful, and I'm afraid that the user level documentation stops about here, and that's actually embarrassing. But since many of the features are those which you get for free without reading any documentation, it's better than nothing. So where's the talk? And then the features described in the code documentation, actually there is documentation of features, but it's interspersed with the code because it was organically grown and should need to be resorted at some point of time. You can use footnote ranges and footnote stacks. Let's see whether I can see an example in the document for the ranges. Yeah, here is a footnote range. From point, well, here's the end of the range, and there's a start of the range somewhere above. I just don't see it. Where is it? Ah, okay, yeah. Yeah, it would need. So the passage from here to here, there is in the text variant A, instead was rewritten like that. And keeping score of those things, which can also actually be nested, is also done with code in the footnote style package. And it's necessary for this feature to actually work without reading the material in between in more than once, because the material in between can go over 20 pages in extreme cases, and you would just bust text capacities if you read the material in between. So there's this way to specify a running footnote that replaces a range like that in a manner which does not cause trouble. Okay. Of course, this is something specially developed for this particular style of document, but it's useful elsewhere as well. Okay, back to the talk that was here. Then we have a differentiation of layout features over the various footnote apparatus. That means different blocks can have different formatting, can have different looks, and can have differently formatted footnote marks and styles, and not only numeric and alphanumeric, but also bold and stuff like that. And you can also say, okay, in this footnote block, I want to have a different widow penalty than in that footnote block. Stuff like that you can all specify per apparatus. Then you can change the style of single footnotes, which I showed before. You can switch into all paragraph mode if it's really necessary. And say this is going to be set as a paragraph, usual vertical style footnote, instead of trying to be put into a running paragraph with other footnotes. Then there are for footnotes, you have special widow penalties, club penalties, and final widow penalties. The reason for that is that if you're in the middle of a footnote, then having a widow is actually not as bad as breaking at a paragraph separation. Because if you break a footnote at a paragraph boundary, then the reader has no clue that the footnote continues on the next page. So in the case of breaking in the middle of a footnote between paragraphs, you want to have a different widow penalty than at the ultimate end of the footnote. And there are separate variables for that. And then there is a you can specify, I want to have a minimum main text of so-and-so many lines. And in this particular document, this is actually a conditional specification. It says, if I have a main text footnote running on this page, in that case, I want to have a minimum of 2 lines of main text. And if I don't have a footnote from the main author running on this text, it may be empty. So that's important. If you have variations running off on for 10 pages or so, you don't want to force main texts on top of the variations, because those the main text will have footnotes in itself, and at some point of time it blows around your ears. So you want to have the possibility to say, okay, there are cases where we want to have a different minimum. And then there's some thing, it's called footnote carry ratio, that tells it how bad it is to carry on a lot of material to the next page. And if you're into debugging this kind of things, there's a way to generate lots of debug output. And that's compiled and optionally doesn't take space or time for the normal compilation. Yeah. The state of these features is it's basically accessible to people who would use it in programming document classes, and it's useful for advanced users if they know what they are looking for and are willing to find the place in the documentation where it's written. Untested features in the current state are continuation marks, namely when a footnote is continued on the next page, to place some mark somewhere that gives a visual clue, this footnote continues. And well, vice versa on the next page, although on the next page it's clear, if you have a footnote block where text runs without any mark in front of it, of course it's continued. Support of set space, that means if you use set space package to double space your text, then usually the footnotes are single spaced, and that's not the case with the currently released version, but I built it in. I have had no tester yet. And there are some more features that make it more compatible with Manyfoot. The current availability is on C10 on Tech Live. We have a somewhat buggy, outdated version. I'm working on that. CVS is not that much better. So my private repository is currently in a state where everything seems to work. And the time plan for is that I'll try to get something out into the public by next week, and the time plan for improving the documentation is I actually don't have one right now. It depends on the demand. Okay, so that concludes the talk, and questions. Yeah, Yeshi?
I have a question. I remember from experiments a few years ago that there was really a problem with colors, with what we call from my and it had to do with the model of LaTeX lacking enough, it didn't have enough information about colors. And you are saying that you solved it, has the model of LaTeX changed so that you could solve it? Or?
It's not so much the model of LaTeX. What I actually do is whenever I place colored stuff on the page, I also place a mark where I record the current state of the color stack. And I use this mark mechanism for restoring the state of the color stack on the next page. And so it's a lot of really ugly hackery, and it does not change the way tech works, but it changes, and it does not really change the way LaTeX works.
Isn't that the LaTeX model has changed since?
No, it didn't. No. I mean, there are new capabilities in PDF tech which can be used for that, and there are some packages from Heiko Oberdijk which make use of that. So I think PDF call foot or something is there, and if you use that, then it will likely work as well. But this is done at the macro level, and there is no change in LaTeX that would accommodate something like that.